Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today CIO Podcast. I'm John Lin, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today, and we're excited to bring you the most practical healthcare CIO insights and perspectives. We know your job is challenging, and we want to help you be more successful. Today's guest is Dr. Richard Clark. He's Senior VP and Chief Analytics Officer at Highmark Health. Welcome, Richard.
Thanks, John. It's really great to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, excited for this discussion. Lots of stuff happening at Highmark Health, but you know, I'm excited to hear about your experience, you know, especially because you have both the payer and provider side. It's going to be an exciting discussion. But before we go there, tell us a little bit about yourself and Highmark Health.
Yeah, thanks. So Highmark Health, as you kind of referenced there, is a payer and a provider. So I always describe it as kind of having four businesses. So a large health plan, 7 million members, Blue Cross Blue Shield branded, health system, 14 hospital, about 2,500 affiliated physicians, national dental company Stop Loss. Then we have a platform business Engine, which provides claims, membership, billing, clinical to other health plans, about 10 million members on that platform. I work at the health kind of parent company, so get to be involved in all of those exciting things.
That's amazing. I mean, just the numbers always astonish me of how we've consolidated out
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. So talk to us, what are you able to do at Highmark Health because you're a payer and a provider that may be difficult if you weren't in both?
Yeah, I mean, there are some things I would say that I feel like at least it might be a little easier for us to do. Certainly others can. So one there is certainly value-based care, right? So we're really excited this year, Allegheny Health Network has kind of a full risk deal on just over 350,000 Highmark Health Plan insured lives, which is obviously a really large population. I think one of the larger value-based deals out there. And so we're doing a ton of work around managing that. And it's been really, really interesting. And, you know, it's a long journey getting the provider to speak the payer language and the payer to speak the provider language. It's one that we've certainly been on. So that's one I think, you know, others are certainly doing it. But for us, maybe it's a little a little easier at times. And the other thing that is like from a geeky analytics perspective that's like really super exciting is, you know, we have obviously access to both claims and clinical data, so that's cool. But the thing that's really exciting is we also have access to clinical data that we can then use to do like lookalike modeling on the claim side. And I feel like starting to really ask questions that we'd never be able to ask otherwise, like, hey, is this claims-based model for a disease state actually representative of what's in the EMR? Or, hey, we have these avoidable ED algorithms on the claim side, but when you look in the EMR, well, maybe why they showed up actually was something totally different. And so you can really start to better represent or better understand, I would say, the real world happenings in claims data, which then allows us to just understand the claims data itself better. So
very interesting. And I think it's great that you're able to get all that data. I think that's one of the biggest challenges of a lot of organizations. But of course, the hottest topic here at Vive is AI. What use of AI and Gen AI do you think is making the most impact today in healthcare?
Yeah, it's a great question. Certainly, it is the topic of conversation. Although I do feel like for me at least, I have noticed a shift where last year it was all excitement of what could happen. This year is a little more of the like the practical of what's actually happened, which is interesting. But for us, I would say, and I'm sure many organizations, the easiest place is the creation of content, right? Like that's simple. It doesn't require you to feed in a lot of your own data. It doesn't have the privacy concerns. So that certainly is like the easiest place. Simple way to think about it, wherever more content equals more revenue, that's like a really good place for it. So
I like that equation.
So obviously all the marketing use cases, those things have been amazing. Operations, another clear place. And I think there we've seen more proficiency improvements than where really allow newer staff to come up the learning curve really fast. So just, close to home in my department doing code conversion, those types of things are really accelerating value there. And then honestly, the hardest place is obviously going all the way into actually delivery of care, which I think, certainly some use cases there, but we, like many others, are being very thoughtful about how those deployments occur.
Sure, you have to be careful there. We understood that. The administrative is much less risk if you're wrong.
For sure.
So that makes sense. Well, that's an interesting view of where we're at today with AI and Gen AI. 3 years from now, what do you think is going to be making the most impact?
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's probably going to be that separation.
Really?
You know, I do. I think it's going to be a while. I hope that we get to scale quickly on the operational side. You know, my hope would be that, you know, the, let's call it, you know, cost of documentation or cost of collecting information goes to close to zero. And I really hope that we get some of the productivity gains that we all kind of hope out of it, because goodness, we need them, right? Just from from a labor perspective. So that I hope, and I think a lot of the focus will be there in 3 years. So the hope, I think, would be that a interaction between a patient and their clinician will look very different, where there's much more just interaction that is that being captured, ambiently or otherwise. And I'm sure there'll be some other innovations that we just have no idea yet, because the field's moving so fast.
That's the most exciting part, right?
It is.
It's like, sure, we can see some things like ambient documentation and relieving that documentation burden, but it's like, you know, we didn't know what was possible with the iPhone and having GPS and accelerometer and, you know, and
totally.
A touchscreen and connectivity, you know, like until 4 years later when we're like, oh, okay, now we can build the apps because we have all that. I feel like we're in that stage for AI. Right?
I totally agree. And it's like one of the biggest transitions to me was, if you and I were talking 3 years ago, you know, we would still be talking about AI, would be talking about, you know, machine learning, or, you know, we'd be talking about those things, and that would be good. But all those things required, you know, more of like an expert team to go off and build some model or something. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the generative work is putting that in the hands of a much broader set of folks, which I think is just going to accelerate that innovation and disruption that you talked about, which is very exciting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So as you look at this future with AI solutions, right? But I think everyone in there is an AI company now,
yes.
Right?
Like, yes.
You know, what do you think people don't understand about what they should be doing to prepare for this wave of AI solutions so that they can take advantage of it?
Yeah, I would say, for me, I'd say two things. One is, the data still is critical, right? And what we've learned is the biggest bottleneck or the biggest determinant of whether a use case is going to work great is whether the data is ready, you know? And I've heard others say it, and I'll just kind of repeat it because I think it's well said, is when you can fully represent the problem in data, the tools are kind of magic. The problem is, can't really represent a lot of our problems fully in data yet, you know, because either the data is not complete or it's not of high enough quality. So I think that's one just recognition that data really matters. And then the other thing I would say is I truly believe that this is going to end up really changing how people work, and not like a little bit, like quite a bit. And that then begs the question is, how do you start to redesign roles in a much more meaningful way, instead of just incrementally saying, oh, I'm going to save a little bit here, a little bit there, stepping back and say, how do we actually fundamentally redesign a role? And honestly, at least in my career, that's not really something we've been doing continuous improvement, but not wholesale redesign of large, roles within the company. So that's going to be a really interesting undertaking, and one that's going to require tons of collaboration across, every enterprise.
Yeah, that's fair. No one likes change. It's hard anyways. It's interesting you mentioned the data piece of it, right? And ensuring that the data is right. I think you're right. If you have the right data, it is magical.
Yeah.
But how much data is enough data, right? I mean, every analytics officer I've ever met or analytics person says, give me more.
Yeah.
I think Google even had a study for that, right?
Yeah.
More data is better than less data. Yep. The algorithm can't overcome.
Yep.
But how do you look at kind of, okay, that's enough. I can make some meaningful value.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. But the answer is, it's never enough, right? And, we get...
You're a greatest showman, fam. Never enough.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. I will not start singing. Don't worry. And we get excited about the stats, right? We were just talking with some folks yesterday how we're processing like 700 billion data points on our members in some of our AI engines. And that's awesome.
Uh-huh.
I do think you can't get away from the fact that it has to be like the right data for the right problem, though. And so we need to make sure that we're still thinking about that. And I guess not, getting over trusting of some of this just because it gives you an answer, because it could be, not the right answer, or it could not be validated. So I think for me, it's more matching the data to the problem you're trying to solve than just being, I would say, tricked by the fact that, oh, if I have a ton of data, it's probably just fine.
That's interesting. That's a really nice perspective on it. You know, you guys have chosen to partner pretty deeply with Google Cloud. Talk to us about why you chose to do that and maybe some of the big projects you're working on with them. I know you just announced a new one, so
we can
talk about that as well.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So one of the things that gets me most excited about this conversation is that it all starts from our strategy, right? Yeah. And so we never really had, you know, we don't have an AI strategy. We have a business strategy that is kind of fueled by AI, which I think is a really important distinction. Right. And so our Living Health strategy was all about making more personalized, proactive, and simple experiences for both clinician and the member. And we knew in order to do that, we needed a couple things. We needed a great digital interface, we needed tremendous interoperability, and we needed a lot of AI. And when we looked at those three things, we thought Google, you know, had a lot of both capabilities, but also kind of willing partnership to come along with us on that journey. And so we've been doing exactly that. We've been doing a ton of work on AI with their Vertex AI platform, building a lot of our kind of AI platforms, our kind of MLOps platforms, because these things are really now starting to run parts of the company, right, in very meaningful ways. Building a longitudinal patient record based on FHIR in the healthcare data engine that allows for lots more of that, real-time interoperability. And then finally, as you mentioned, yesterday announced that we're going to be running Epic Payer Platform on GCP, which will be the first time that's done. And that's important for us because the Epic Payer Platform gives us kind of at-scale bi-directional communication with providers, so we can both provide insights, clinical data they otherwise wouldn't see, but also in a more seamless way, extract relevant clinical information out of the EMR, and then connect it to all those other things I was talking about, our insights engine with our AI platforms, as well as our longitudinal patient record.
Interesting. It's almost like full circle, since you need the payer and
you're
the customer of Epic on both sides.
That's exactly, I mean, honestly, we kind of have we call it our Living Health Analytic Model, which we draw as a circle, exactly, because it's all about closing that loop. And then as the more we drive through that, the more it can learn. And that's, we're really just trying to represent a learning healthcare system so that we can test things, learn things and more easily, decouple or couple loosely, coupled solutions to that platform.
That's awesome. Well, we like to discover tidbits about people who come on the CIO podcast. And I saw that you're a neuroscientist. Studied that, obviously, took a little career path change, but I'm sure there's elements there. But typing is good. Ambient voice, we talked about. Voice is great. I think we're all adapting it. My kids use voice like crazy. But how likely is it that one day computers are just going to read our brain? I need a pizza and it shows up.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe not the best use case, but
I would be fine with it. No, I mean, in some ways, I guess one could argue it's happening today in some places, right? There's, brain machine interfaces that are already powering helping people that have been paralyzed walk again, or I remember when I was in graduate school a long time ago at Pitt and Carnegie Mellon, we were already doing studies that were recording neural activity to drive a robotic arm. So I mean, I guess the answer is maybe happening already in some cases, but I think it is totally possible, and it's going to be really just fascinating to see how these things move forward. And I think equally fascinating to me, though, is while all of that is true, I still go into our hospital operations every day. I'm still shocked with how much manual and paper that there is. So that divide between the state of the possible and the reality of the situation is also pretty shocking sometimes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I often say the EHR is a paper generating machine. Yeah. A few clicks, you can generate all the paper you want.
That's exactly right.
That's interesting. Well, we always like to wrap up these episodes with a little career advice, career discussion. What advice would you give someone who's kind of looking to make a career in this kind of data analytics AI space?
Yeah, I mean, I love the question. So I have three pieces of advice.
Okay.
You know, the
great.
Probably biggest one is just be a continuous learner. Like the amount
it's
of change here is unbelievable, right? It's just unbelievable. And so being willing to just continuously learn, relearn, you know, I think that's really, really, really important. You know, the second is, you know, and I get a lot of people that are concerned, they'll see some barrier to the field of like, oh, I don't have enough technical expertise. Mm. And I guess from my point of view, the technical barriers are decreasing. The thing that is not decreasing is the need to be able to connect that to business outcomes, translate that to business processes. So I would say don't be afraid by the kind of technical aspect. You know, data science, you know, data analytics needs, you know, more and more connection to the business. And then the third is a little pithy thing I always say is just be interested and be interesting. You know,
yeah,
I find
like
that people are super excited to talk about the challenges that they have in this space. And if they have someone that's trying to help them, that's like a great kind of way in. So
yeah, it's so interesting to hear everyone's career path, especially at an event like Vibe that we're at right now. You know, you hear someone, you're like, dude, I was cleaning the toilets at the hospital, and then I heard about this IT job. Because at the time, there was no degree. There was no...
Right. Yeah.
It's like, you know, but you know, why do we set this bar of like, I have to understand it? And to your point, the tools are getting so much easier.
So much easier. So, you know, if you can understand the business problem and you can help people apply the tools, hey, you know, there's a lot of value there for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Richard, I appreciate you taking time to talk to us and share everything you're doing at Highmark Health. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great healthcare IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com or search for the CIO podcast by Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcast application. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.